Welcome to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and today we're going to feature an interview with Gloria Rolando, who made a really interesting film called 1912, Breaking the Silence, and a terrific documentary. Phil Conlon is here. You saw the film.
I did see the film, and yes. I underline that it is a terrific documentary.
Tragic story. Yeah. It's really, there's some moments in that's quite difficult to watch. We'll get into what it's all about a little later on. I want to make sure we announce right now that there's going to be a rally for the freedom of the Cuban Five in conjunction with the rally in front of the White House and other rallies across the world taking place as part of the third annual 5 days for the Cuban Five. Join us by the headquarters of the television radio broadcast hub of Bell Canada's media unit. That's at Queen Street West and St. John, June the 7th at 1 p.m. June 7, 1 p.m., 2299 Queen Street West. And there's also another very important event, and I may have to read all the details later, but the Syrian-Canadian community is most concerned that they're not being allowed to participate in the elections in Syria. There's a great deal of attention to do with the oligarchs in Ukraine. I noticed that one of the one percenters came in first, isn't it?
Wow, what a surprise, eh?
See, oligarchs are number one in the Ukraine.
A chocolate magnate, I guess.
A chocolate magnate. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, he grows chocolate in Ukraine.
Chocolate oligarch. Yeah. But I think we might be joined now by Zafar Bengash.
It's Lord Ahmed.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Yes, okay. I was thinking of our intermediary there. Well, thank you, Lord Ahmed, for being with us. You attended a conference and spoke on this issue of Kashmir, which I think the world is always surprised that Kashmir, this issue, it began in 1948, and the United Nations Security Council had a resolution to resolve it, and here we are. It's 2014. Why is this issue still unresolved?
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak on this issue. It is India that went on 1st of January to the Security Council and complained about Pakistan and asked the United Nations to resolve the tension between India and Pakistan, and then a resolution was passed in 1948 and 49. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because it was Chapter 6 resolution rather than Chapter 7, so mm-hmm. there were recommendations, but nevertheless, the Indian Prime Minister promised the Security Council as well as the Prime Minister of Pakistan and also his address, Jawaharlal Nehru's address to the Indian Parliament, mm-hmm. to say that the people of Kashmir will be given the right of self-determination in accordance with the UN resolutions, and free, fair, and impartial plebiscite would be given. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened so because more recent years they've said that because of the two wars that were fought between India and Pakistan, and the agreement in Tashkent and also in Simla meant that this superseded the United Nations resolution. Mm-hmm. And I have been arguing that nothing supersedes the United Nations because these agreements were to end the war and had nothing to do with the issue of Kashmir.
Yeah, yes, they're the primary legal agreements. Almost all of the international order is based on them, are they not?
Absolutely, and this is why we have to remind the international community that when you talk about UN resolutions, then the UN Resolution 47 on Kashmir between India and Pakistan is still valid on statute and needs to be resolved. Mm-hmm. Because now you have a political party, BJP, that has come into power, which is threatening to revoke Article 370 of their constitution, which gave special status to Kashmir, which gave autonomy to Indian occupied Kashmir. They are saying, well, no, we are going to make Kashmir as an integral part of India, which would be very dangerous because the people have been struggling already. And can I just remind your listeners, 100,000 people have been killed, 10,000 women have been raped. These are figures that Amnesty International, Physicians for Human Rights, Asia Watch, and other international organizations have sort of reported on.
Again, we're speaking to Lord Nazir Ahmed. He is a member of the All-Party Parliamentary Committee on Kashmir. And again, certainly everyone wants to know whether what you think the impact will be or what we need to be doing to get the message to the new Prime Minister of India that what is hoped for by the rest of the world.
Well, first of all, Indian economy isn't performing as good as what it was claiming. And unemployment amongst young people is quite high. And this prime minister has, for two reasons, he's been elected. One is because of the economy, and the second one is because he increased tension against Pakistan. Well, Mr. Nawaz Sharif, Prime Minister of Pakistan, has gone to his oath-taking ceremony. Hopefully, that should have reduced the tension. But to increase India's economy, they need to make sure that all neighbors are happy and the human rights record improves in Kashmir or even in Punjab against the Sikhs and the Nagas. But certainly, I'm concerned about the Kashmiri people's right of self-determination. And there are 700,000 soldiers on the streets of Kashmir, the most heavily militarized area in the world. And, you know, all we are asking is to live in peace. All we are asking is a basic human right, which is given in accordance with the UN resolutions, that people should be given the right to decide. You know, East Timor had the right to decide their own future. South Sudan had the right. Whether we agree with Crimea or not, they decided. And the international community has a commitment with the Kashmiri people in the UN resolutions. None of these other people had any commitment from the UN. Only Kashmir, and that's why this conference in Toronto and another one
In Hamilton, was it not?
Hamilton, a very well attended conferences. So if your listeners can write to their members of parliament and ask if they would help and put some pressure on the government to make a representation to the Indian government or write to the High Commissioner, that would be great.
Yeah. Can I ask you lastly that there was at one point the Obama administration was talking about it was going to get involved and other, but then they seemed to step back. I assume Britain did as well. And the comments I read suggested that that was because of wanting to accommodate the government of India and not to interrupt with its affairs.
Sadly, that is so. Previously, Tony Blair and President Bush said the same things. And now, you know, it's all about economy. It's all about business. It's all about trade. And because India happens to be a very large country with 350 million people, middle class, who buy products from the U.S. and the West, people are more thinking more about business than human rights and international law and rule of law. Yeah. And sadly, business has become more my priority than the human rights situation. Yeah. And both President Obama and British government, because when you put pressure and you ask, certainly in London, they always talk about, you know, their special relationship and their business interests and that sort of thing, and which is very, very sad.
Yeah, it certainly is. Lord Nazir Ahmed, we are very glad that you could join us. We thank you very much. We think it's a great contribution that you came.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very, very much.
Bye-bye.
That's Lord Nazir Ahmed. He is a member of the House of Lords in Britain. He's also a member of the All Parties Parliamentary Committee on Kashmir. Attending also was Sir Gerald Kaufman, a member of British Parliament. And there's additional the meeting that he spoke at on Saturday and Sunday, spoke in Hamilton, was organized by Friends of Kashmir, the Islamic Society of York Region, and the Canadian Council for Justice and Peace. And as Lord Ahmed suggests, you can, of course, in this age of the Internet, with the slightest diligence, can connect with all those parties. And he would, of course, appreciate if you would write to say there should be a referendum held in Kashmir. Seems that's one of those fundamental matters which should be possible to organize. And I want to mention, just before we speak to Otis Richmond, I want to make sure I mention again that the Syrian-Canadian community is expressing its displeasure at not being permitted to participate in the Syrian elections. As we know, various people from around the world are permitted to vote in their home countries, and it's often mentioned and celebrated here. However, the Harper government closed the Syrian embassies in May 2012. We commented on this program. That was the most unhelpful thing to do. Embassies are there to facilitate human contact, trade information and whatnot, and when you close them down, it's like taking the oxygen out of the room. Naturally, they find themselves in a situation where Syria has chosen a path of reform and is holding an election, and they're not being permitted to participate. So they're going to hold a symbolic vote at the Mississauga Valley Community Center on May 28, and they're also at the occasion of the election, which I believe is scheduled for June the 6th, they're going to be having a demonstration at the U.S. consulate, which would be the right place to do that, since the leader of the Syrian opposition, the armed terrorist opposition, is located in Washington, or the Pentagon. I don't know which one takes charge of these matters. But at any rate, it's those two actions are taking place, and it's being called by the Syrian community of Toronto.